Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. An unthinkable act of anti-Mexican violence shook El Paso 2 years ago.
The shots were going, do. And then he was like, is that gunshots? I said, yes. People were running inside saying there was a shooter.
All I want to do is find my mom. Somebody needs to tell me where she is. I want to know if she's dead or alive or if she's still in Walmart.
The August 3rd shooting brought an already close border community even closer. Millions of dollars were raised for survivors and victims' families. The El Paso Strong hashtag went viral around the world. A large candela, or candle installation, pays tribute to the victims outside that Walmart. A healing garden was officially dedicated this year. The massacre also resulted in one of the biggest artistic collaborations in the city's history. The El Paso Symphony Orchestra, the University of Texas at El Paso Music Department, El Paso Opera, and the chamber music organization El Paso Pro Musica joined together to produce the El Paso Requiem. It was commissioned by a new nonprofit also birthed out of the tragedy, Communities for Peace. Today on Fronteras, we talk to some of the parties involved in this historic collaboration. Bohuslav Ratay, music director and conductor of the El Paso Symphony Orchestra and director of orchestras at UTEP. Dr. Steve Wilson, professor of trombone and chair of the UTEP Department of Music. Dr. Elisa Wilson, director of choral activities at UTEP. And Jorge Martin, composer of the El Paso Requiem. Steve Wilson recalls August 3rd and how that unspeakable act of hate and violence led to an artistic call for peace.
So Elisa and I were in Colorado on a vacation on August 3rd, and I started getting some Facebook notifications and text messages from friends asking if I was okay. And I didn't know what they were talking about. And so I turned on the news and I was shocked to see in the national news El Paso, you know, as part of a mass shooting event. And we came home the next day, and I actually got some trombone friends together. And we went down to the hospital and we started playing some music in the waiting room area for the people that were there, just trying to provide some healing, you know, some sense of normalcy. And, you know, we're thinking that, you know, we've got to do something more. We should do something bigger. And so I reached out to the El Paso Symphony Orchestra, the El Paso Pro Musica, the El Paso Opera. And I said, hey, guys, let's get together and see if we can't collaborate on something to do something big with all of us to provide some healing to our community. And, you know, in our first meeting, everyone immediately said, yes, let's do something. And we immediately got the El Paso Community Foundation on board as well. And we as a group decided that the best way we could work together is to commission a new work to honor the victims and to support the families, and again, provide some healing. And so that's where the group Communities for Peace was founded. And that's where the genesis of the idea came to be. And so, you know, Elisa was really instrumental in helping guide it, the piece to be a requiem, and helping to decide what the text should be. And, you know, we all worked together to pick our composer. And we wanted someone with a Hispanic background. We wanted someone who was up and coming with a national reputation, who had a really strong track record of success. And Jorge Martin immediately came to mind. He had just been on our campus the year before. As we looked into his music, we saw that he would be the perfect person to be the voice of our city in this incredible time of tragedy.
Well, before we talk to you, Jorge, let's hear from you, Elisa. Tell us more about this Communities for Peace partnership.
This really was Steve's brainchild. We've lived in El Paso a long time and worked at UTEP and worked with local arts organizations throughout that time. And given our history of, you know, working between the university and our external partnerships, it seemed like a no-brainer that we should all work together to create something for our community. And so The original idea behind the project is that each of these different organizations would have representation in the final project. And so that is why it is a work for choirs and orchestra, why we have a significant cello feature, and why there are soloists in the project. to represent the opera company. And so ultimately for me, beyond Communities for Peace, the choir itself ended up being a true community choir because it not only had members of the UTEP Concert Chorale, but I was able to bring in about 60 singers from the community. And the singers in that group are choir alumni from UTEP from many generations. There were a couple of first responders in that choir. There were folks who were there at the Walmart that day in the choir. And there were current El Paso Opera resident artists who gave their time to sing in it. So it ended up having the spirit of that community right there in the choir, in addition to being part of that larger sense of Communities for Peace.
Well, Jorge, you're approached to write a requiem. That's not a small task to do. So what is the first step that you took when you received that commission? Did you already have in mind a requiem mass maybe in your wheelhouse from the past, some ideas you were wanting to toss about, or maybe were you basing this requiem mass, or is it a mass? I mean, what kind of text did you eventually introduce into the piece? I'm curious to see how it all evolved from the beginning.
Well, the first thing was very practical. I was commissioned in January in 2020, and the premiere was supposed to be in September, which is actually kind of quick for a very large work like this. So Steve recommended, instead of wasting time, which it takes to get the rights to something copyrighted, that I should use the public domain. So the most obvious thing we discussed was the Latin Requiem Mass. Later, it occurred to me that it would be good to add English to the Latin and Spanish. So to find the right words for those elements, I went to verses from the Bible. And I chose one from Genesis in English and one in Spanish from the New Testament. Actually, it created kind of a very interesting kind of piece textually, because it certainly is not a mass. I mean, in the sense that a formal mass, it uses really a fraction of the Latin mass for the dead. So I chose the sections from that text that spoke to me most and also seemed most appropriate to the event. But then I didn't quite know what to call it, because it's partly the Requiem Mass, but then it has these other texts which aren't necessarily at all about a requiem, but they do both have to deal with death and plotting murder. The first one in English from Genesis was when Joseph's brothers plot to kill him. Then the one in Spanish is about Rachel weeping for her sons, but she refused to be consoled because they were dead. And that seemed to me very psychologically real, about how we need to be ready for consolation. You know, we have to go through some other rather raw emotions. And then the opening of the piece is what I call the dreamer, which is the verse from Genesis. Actually, that is a verse that I had wanted to set for very, very, very many years. My memory of it was, I was watching a television show about Martin Luther King. And it was in that context that they used the verse, "Behold, here comes the dreamer. Let us slay him and see what becomes of his dreams." That's a little bit condensed from what's actually in the Old Testament, but that's the thrust of it. And it seemed intuitively appropriate, although if you stop to use your conscious, rational mind, it may not seem to make sense. But I think that murderous urge between or among brothers is something to grapple with. But also the irony, in a sense, that in the Bible, it's a group plotting to murder an individual. And in fact, in most American mass shootings or violence, it's an individual that aims to murder a group. I want to say also about dreamers that we are all dreamers. And the idea of killing dreams is really, in a very profound way, what happens. That's the violence of ending these lives that are innocent.
Jorge Martin is the composer of the El Paso Requiem. We're also talking with Dr. Steve Wilson, professor of trombone and chair of the Department of Music at the University of Texas at El Paso, and with Dr. Elisa Wilson, director of choral activities at UTEP. When we come back, the El Paso Requiem is a major work for choir and orchestra performed in a pandemic, a situation that presented a challenge.
It was so critical that the words were clearly heard so that the audience could fully appreciate them and the message behind the piece.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The El Paso Requiem is a massive 40-minute work for choir, vocal soloists, and orchestra. It marks the culmination of the historic collaboration between several El Paso arts organizations to pay tribute to the victims and survivors of the August 3, 2019 mass shooting. The Requiem world premiered in El Paso this past October. Today, we're talking to many of the parties involved in putting this grand artistic alliance in motion. We're talking to Dr. Steve Wilson, chair of the UTEP Department of Music, Dr. Elisa Wilson, director of choral activities at UTEP, Jorge Martin, composer of the El Paso Requiem, and Bohuslav Ratay, music director and conductor of the El Paso Symphony Orchestra and director of orchestras at UTEP. Over 100 musicians and singers took the stage October 22nd and 23rd, a massive undertaking, especially in a pandemic. Ratay says there was no apprehension, just joy to be making music on a large scale.
Yeah, you're right. Over 100 people on stage, especially when you have chorus and the distance between myself and the chorus and the orchestra and the chorus, there are always challenges to keep it all together on time. So it clicks. So, just with any piece that you engage chorus with, it gets a little more challenging than, let's say, just performing a Mozart symphony with a smaller orchestra. So, but we overcame those challenges pretty much right away during the first couple of rehearsals. And then from there, the piece just grew on us until, you know, we performed it. And I think it was a success. It was a huge success. The music was beautiful. I think people relate to some of the gorgeous melodies and harmonies that Jorge was using, and that made it obviously more accessible to not just the chorus, the orchestra, but also the audience. Sometimes we get scared. We get commissioned pieces, and I was like, what is it going to be? What's, you know, the first time we're going to hear it? Is it going to be even playable? You just never know with contemporary music. The moment I started studying the score and playing it on my piano in my studio, somewhat starting to make sense. You know, it's a long process for conductors to a degree to somehow internalize the piece overall. So, you know, I spend months and months trying to understand and make a sense out of it. And as I'm playing on the piano, I'm discovering all these beautiful melodies and harmonies. So that made definitely my job much easier, realizing right from the get-go that this is going to be a gorgeous piece.
Well, Elisa, Bohuslav sort of hinted at this earlier, but I'm curious to hear how you managed to get past some of those obstacles that are presented because of the pandemic. Obviously, musicians, many of them can wear masks. Others are maybe blowing into an instrument. But singers, they're putting it all out there. They can't really sing with a mask. So what kind of logistics were put into place to try to keep it a safe performance?
That's a great question. And we had a lot of meetings and discussions about how we could do this work safely. The biggest challenge for us wearing a mask is being able to articulate the text clearly. And particularly with this project, it was so critical that the words were clearly heard so that the audience could fully appreciate them and the message behind the piece.
So, if I can interrupt, the singers were masked then?
Well, they were not. Ah. And this is how we did it. The protocol that we followed in rehearsals was, if you were fully vaccinated, you could choose whether to wear a mask or not. If you were not vaccinated, wear a mask. There were, you know, I would say in any given rehearsal, about a third of the singers would wear masks and about two thirds would not. But when we got closer to the performance week, in discussions with the symphony, we decided that the best protocol would be for us to show proof of vaccination or proof of a negative COVID test 72 hours before the choir came to work with the orchestra. And that was so that we could sing without masks on stage. So the way that we did it is we wore our masks backstage before entering the stage area, and we would put them on when we came off. But when we were on stage singing, the masks came off for most of the singers. Some elected to wear them. They felt more comfortable, and we certainly allowed people to make their own choices. I purchased about 200 KN95 breathable black masks that have some space in the front, and those are disposable. So every night people could just choose if they wanted to wear it, they could wear it and they could have a safe experience. And the lyrics came across beautifully because in reality, most of the singers chose not to wear them in the performance.
I personally feel extremely lucky that we did this project here in El Paso. And I cannot imagine in some places to do this collaboration with so many people at some places around the United States where people are not responsible enough for actually following through the vaccinations. Because, you know, when you put 150 people on stage and something goes wrong, considering COVID, obviously, then the repercussions can be huge. And I think that El Paso is doing extremely, extremely well with the numbers of vaccinated people. And that actually allowed us to put this project together the way it's supposed to be, meaning no masks, singers could feel freely and sing. So I felt extremely lucky that the situation here in El Paso is such that it allowed us to do it properly without any limitations, as perhaps we would have to do it if it was in a different time.
Jorge, have you received any requests to have this piece performed anywhere else other than El Paso?
No, I have not yet been asked, but it is something that I do hope happens because it's the whole project is really an American thing. And I think part of the genius of Steve's idea is that I don't think any other community had come up with the idea of having a piece of concert music or any kind of music written for the purpose of commemorating the dead from these mass violence events. And I was very, very, very impressed and moved when I heard him explain what was the plan and the idea. And so I hope it doesn't become just, a pièce d'occasion, you know, a piece that's written just for one occasion and then basically bye-bye, you know. Because certainly I put into it more universal intentions and ideas and so forth. It is a work of art, and as such, if it's worthy, could merit being heard in other parts of the country.
Well, Steve, I'm going to circle around back to you. Are there any final words you'd like to say about this collaboration or maybe about any future collaborations that this project might have spurred?
As far as this project goes, I couldn't have been happier with the results. I mean, just from beginning to end, just all of us coming together, the El Paso Strong hashtag came about because of that shooting, and we are stronger together than we are apart or as individuals. And that certainly is the case for the El Paso arts organizations involved in this project. That we just demonstrated when we work together as a team, we can accomplish really great things. And I think the piece is beautiful. And I think Jorge provided a wonderful voice again for our city and for this event and for those families of the people who were tragically taken. And what it shows us too is that we can do great things together. And so I do hope, and I know that we will continue to work together, the music organizations in El Paso. And I think we can certainly plan on doing some other really great projects in the future.
Dr. Steve Wilson is chair of the Department of Music at the University of Texas at El Paso. We also talked today with Dr. Elisa Wilson, director of choral activities at UTEP, with Bohuslav Rate, music director and conductor of the El Paso Symphony Orchestra and director of orchestras at UTEP, and with Jorge Martin, composer of the El Paso Requiem. The El Paso Requiem was world premiered October 22nd and 23rd in El Paso. You're probably wondering why you haven't been able to hear any excerpts of the El Paso Requiem. Texas Public Radio was not granted broadcast permission by the American Federation of Musicians Local Union per its agreement with the El Paso Symphony Orchestra management and musicians. Those broadcast limitations are common among many symphonies and music groups in the U.S. To read the text of the El Paso Requiem, go to tpr.org. And full disclosure, I am a former member of the El Paso Symphony Orchestra. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show online at tpr.org and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas, who's leaving TPR for KUT to be its new morning newscaster. We wish her the best. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Brie Kirkham. And our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.